Welcome to our Pinellas County Schools podcast, where we celebrate great teachers in our school district and join with them in identifying those aha moments and those best practices that these teachers have mastered in their classrooms, where we celebrate those aha moments. I'm Jolene Jackson, and I am the Director of Professional Development for Pinellas County Schools, and I have my co-host here with us today.
I'm Holly Slaughter. I am the K-5 ELA Specialist for Pinellas County Schools.
Welcome, everyone, and our listeners, and our guests, and our co-hosts. I want to remind everyone who is listening today that we have a common thread on this podcast, and that is where we celebrate aha moments, and we celebrate teacher advocacy. And what is teacher advocacy? It's really about that confidence that our teachers have in their strategies, that they know themselves as someone who really impacts student learning in the classroom. It's not just accident, it's not their parents, it's not the great curriculum, but it's really that teachers hold the power with the tools that they have in their tool belt. And we're gonna talk about those strategies today. And it really is research that tells us that these are best strategies, but more importantly, it is the experience that our guests share with us that really helps us to recognize those tools and build our teacher advocacy.
I've invited two fabulous educators who are here with us today. They're going to help us and our listeners have some aha moments about close reading. If you're not into close reading now, by the end of this podcast, you will be hungry for more.
Ooh.
Let's start with you,
yes,
Kelly.
Yes, let's hear our guests who are here to tell us all about close reading.
My name is Kelly Austin, and I'm the principal at Sandy Lane Elementary School.
I'm Robin Weissart. I'm the fifth grade ELA teacher at 74th Street and the AVID coordinator.
All right. Welcome. Thank you for being here with us.
So, all right. Educators, gather round. Today we are going to dive into some serious teaching gold. The strategies with a whopping 0.63 effect size.
Whoa, 0.63. Okay, so it's not super important that our listeners out there know what 0.63 effect size means. I don't want to bore you immediately, but really what that means is anything above a 0.4 effect size is really helping us move our students, and we're going to have greater gains than if we were to do something lower than a 0.4. So anything above a 0.4 is really great. So when we're talking about 0.63, wow, this is some juice in these strategies.
Yeah, so close reading is like the superhero of comprehension strategies. It's like taking a powerful magnifying glass and taking your time to really get into the nitty-gritty of the text.
Absolutely. It's like diving deeper into those layers of meaning and fostering that critical thinking skills. But let's not forget about Robin's favorite tool, and one that she's here, that we especially invited her here for today, is annotation. And that annotation is?
It's like close reading's trusty sidekick. It's like the dynamic duo partnership, marking up the text, jotting down thoughts, and making those connections.
It's where we really unlock the secrets of the text, where our students, where they might feel like they're not hearing or understanding and grappling with that text, and it unlocks the secrets. So with that, let's go ahead, and I like to call this a podcast party, so we're going to go ahead and get this podcast party started. And Holly, do you want to kick us off with a question for our guests?
Sure. So I'll start with the first question. What strategies or techniques do you use to introduce close reading to your students?
Well, I'll go, as the principal, I'll go ahead and start, just because we started in the primary grade, second and third grade. And what we do is we want them to actually start engaging and talking to the author of the text. Mm. So in order to do that, we teach them how to chunk it up and then stop at those chunk marks and ask themselves, what have I just read? Mm-hmm. And so we're really just initially getting them to stop and think about what it is that they just read. And oftentimes I tell the story of all of us, whenever we sit down to read, sometimes you're reading, and then you realize you have no idea what you just read because you're thinking about what you're going to make for dinner or what you're going to do after school or something like that. So it really is a tool, I tell the kids, to monitor your own reading, because you don't want to get to the end of the entire text and realize you have no idea what you just read. You want to catch yourself before that happens. And I tell them that's really the difference between a good reader and a bad reader. A good reader is going to stop themselves and go back and reread. And a bad reader is just going to keep plowing through and then say, I'm done at the end.
Not even realizing that they just missed all the good stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. So you start out by teaching them to monitor and be aware of when they're starting to check out, and then to chunk and go back in. You said something really interesting. You teach them to interact with the author. Can you say a little bit more about that?
So the author is the one who's telling the story or giving you the information that they're trying to engage the reader with. And it's our job as the reader to talk back to that author and to jot questions to the author. You know, what questions do you have? What are you thinking yourself about what you just read? Mm-hmm. So it's just getting them to realize that the author's maybe going to talk back to you after you've asked a question and things like that.
Love it. Yeah, interesting.
Powerful.
And I feel like we pick up with fifth grade, with the higher grades, where it's kind of just a complete segue into the older kids, because they're doing the same thing. They're chunking and they're monitoring. And a lot of times I give that exact example of how I was thinking about what I'm going to do for dinner, or I was thinking about where's my pencil. And so a lot of times I feel like right now, especially with kind of the gap in achievement, feeling the effects of kids being out of school for so long, we're still feeling those effects. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like repetition. And even when you're saying it, I feel like the modeling of it, and a lot of times I model the opposite and they catch it. Like, I'll start reading without the title. And so I'm thinking out loud while I'm doing it, and I'm thinking, what is this about? And I'm doing it because I see that no matter how many times I'm saying that to them, that read the title, do the text features, they're still skipping through it, even at fifth grade. Mm-hmm. And so I'll start reading and I'll just do whatever, and I won't read the headings and they'll stop me. Mm-hmm. And so I do it enough that they stop me all the time. And the whole obvious point is to let the kids start doing it to themselves. And of course, they love catching us in a mistake. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't naturally make them, of course, so I have to force it. Kidding. Mm-hmm. But I honestly will do it on purpose and not read a heading, not read a caption, not read text features. And I'll say, I don't do it sometimes. And so they monitor each other. And so the chunk by chunk, and a huge one for the fifth graders, they come in knowing this hashtag. A lot of them use the hashtag for the central idea, and they're obsessed with that. Like, they love that, especially since it's, you know, that's the cool thing to do with.
Tell me about the hashtag. I mean, I know, like, hashtag, you know, about, like, social media.
Yeah.
What's the hashtag?
Well,
for close
I used to call it a number sign, but apparently now it's a hashtag. And so they came in. A lot of teachers use it in lower grades, and it is the central idea. It is they take the chunk, and it's not a whole section always. Right now, I feel like we're doing a little, we still have to stick with little chunks, like, not even a whole paragraph. Sometimes just a couple of sentences, check yourself, what did you just read? And so they love hashtagging, and they do it in the margins when you text mark in the margins. Mm-hmm. And when I monitor and I walk around, I have to say, oh, I want to be able to see by that one hashtag what that entire section is about without having to read it. Mm-hmm. And so, like, when we were doing the American Revolution, it would say something like hashtag taxes. Mm-hmm. And I would say, oh, taxes on bananas or tax? No, not on bananas. Like, they involve themselves and they realize if I'm looking at your paper, and they call me a stalker and I'll take it. If I'm stalking your paper, I don't want to have to read that. I want your hashtag to tell me what it was about. And that, it's just repetition of that. And they love hashtags. So,
wow. Yeah. So what I'm starting to see is that this is also becoming a formative assessment for you as you're walking around and you're seeing the text markups and you're seeing what they're thinking. Then you're able to monitor and then give in the moment feedback. So this is just great, great strategy, like, all around. Yeah.
Great. I just also want to pull out that notion of modeling as a sort of, you know, high yield strategy, and that even in fifth grade, they still need that explicit instruction. And I love the idea of teaching by example, but also providing non-examples because you're almost sort of like challenging them or gamifying it in a way. Yeah. They get to find your error. And then that helps them really to sort of, you know, take that on as their own strategy. Yeah.
And I find like that is so much, I do that so much more than I ever, ever have, because it's so, it can be so difficult to engage kids these days because of so much stimulation going around and other things. I'm not a video game. I'm not Snapchat. And so it's constant engagement. And for them to catch their teacher doing it wrong, I mean, that is heavenly. And it works, because then they're like, oh, you didn't, they do it to each other. So I do a lot of non-example more than ever, I feel like.
Well, I think one of the things that you said too, Robin, was that it's repetition, repetition, repetition. So it's teaching them that those pre-reading strategies, the during-reading strategies, the after-reading strategies, and doing that, doing it every single time. Because if you don't push them to do it every single time, they very easily will get lax.
Those happen.
It's true.
Well, and for our listeners out there, we mentioned that think alouds are great for fifth graders, and that fifth graders need the repetition. But we have listeners out there who are teaching kids in middle school, kids in high school, and maybe even aren't in our adult ed. And I think that modeling our think alouds is important no matter what age, because when we're transparent about our thinking, that is very metacognitive, and then it can integrate into their own thinking, and it teaches them how to think, which a lot of times that too is something that our students need no matter what grade they're in or what content. And I know we have our ELA specialists with us today, but this is a great strategy to be used and across all contents. We want to mark up the text in whatever we're reading.
Science, you referenced social
everything.
Absolutely.
And I find like with that, it leads also to, it's not just the marking of the text, but it's forcing that higher order thinking. Like, why did you write that? And not just stopping there, not just the why, but, oh, well, what would you do if? Or it just forces it even more. And the more you do it, and sometimes it takes longer to get through a text, which is hard because our text is complex, you know, with the modules. And so it's forcing the complexity on purpose, which we get. But it's also, it slows you down, but in a good way, because they're engaged and you stop and think a lot. You stop and monitor and have to do a teachable, anything teachable at that moment when they're not getting it. And so, and it does force, well, why did you write that? The higher order thinking, which then generalizes into middle school and high school and every level. Why are you thinking? Go deeper. And the cost is levels of thinking. And we're doing that. We're doing that from pre-K now to fifth grade. We're pushing it school-wide, and it's such a great way of thinking. And again, it goes all the way up to whatever age, us.
Even us. I mean, I use the strategies as well.
Yeah.
I think the other thing to point out, and we talked a little bit about this, is that the annotation is a formative assessment that leads to immediate feedback. Just like you said, if you're asking them to hashtag and they hashtag taxes, right? So they're grabbing the topic of the paragraph that they're reading about, but not necessarily the essence of what is it about taxes that they're hashtagging, right? What is the author, going back to your point, what does the author want me to know? And that annotation can lead to on-the-spot feedback, which is, again,
constant.
Powerful.
And they might be really pleased with that hashtag taxes, which, you know, you celebrate.
Of course.
But
what's next?
Then I start throwing out silly guesses and they're like, no. And then they want to fix it.
Yeah.
So it works. It works.
Yeah. And so tell me, how might you use close reading strategies to build on that critical thinking? Like you said, that it isn't just about the annotation and having them find the key ideas. But then how do you take it to the next level, like using it for classroom dialogue? You know, tell us a little bit about how that critical thinking comes into play with close reading.
Well, oftentimes we also discuss, you know, purpose of the reading. So sometimes we're reading for a writing purpose. So maybe there's a writing prompt that we are asked to, that we ask the children to write about, a full essay. And so we give them 2, 3, 4 different sources of text that are on the same topic. And they have to go and seek out evidence that's going to support whatever the prompt is. Mm-hmm. And that's very high level.
Wow.
And asking our third graders and fourth graders and fifth graders to write essays to multiple mm-hmm. pieces of text and put them all together and synthesize it. That's very, very, that's the hardest work that I think mm-hmm. we do at mm-hmm. the elementary level.
Yeah. And what you're getting to where you just said the word that synthesis mm-hmm. is we're taking our knowledge from multiple sources and synthesizing it into our own piece of work, which then means we have mm-hmm. to internalize and sift through the essentials and then create our own piece of work, which creativity, mm-hmm. wow, that's now we're getting into the expression of ourselves and what we know and what we're passionate about. And so that sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is the writing. It's reading for writing and writing for reading, and it ties in together. And with close reading, when you're going through any of the sections, I'll always stop and think, oh, why did the author just say that? Like today they, in one of the, it was an intervention task, the author said that the character put the book aside. And so I said, you put the book aside because they were going to listen to their friend. But the author didn't say listen to their friend. He mm-hmm. closed the book and put the book aside. And so I asked them, what does that mean? The author didn't say he was about to listen to his friend. So they had to try to figure out why. And mm-hmm. and I said, does that ever happen with you when you know that somebody's going to listen to you? And one of the students said, when my mom puts her phone down. I thought, well, that's exactly.
That's right.
And so what can you do as a writer? We just read that in a reading intervention, but what can you do as a writer without saying the words? Mm-hmm. You don't want to say, well, now the character was listening. Mm-hmm. No, they put the book aside. And mm-hmm. and so it's all tied in together. Mm-hmm. Like you said, like it is all for, it combines. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, wonderful.
So I want to dig in a little bit. We've been talking a lot about close reading and annotating. Wide reading is also a high-yield strategy. So what I'm interested in hearing from you all is how do we make room for both? Wide reading, close reading. We can't close read everything. How do you decide?
So I'm an avid reader myself, and so I think that it's critical that we get students to find out what they like to read mm-hmm. as well and what are their interests, and making sure that we give them opportunity to do that, whether it's checking books out of your school library or your classroom library, but getting them getting books into their hands that they are interested in reading, I think is critical. I often think also about, something's going on in your life, and what's the first thing we all do? We pick up our phone and we Google it, mm-hmm. and we want to learn more about it, right?
Sure.
So it's the same thing with kids. Mm-hmm. So we want to find out what are their interests. And so, and it's okay. It doesn't always have to be a paper book. It could be online. We have mm-hmm. so many resources, digital resources that kids use, and they're so much better at it than we are. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we just have to foster that. I think we have to find out what their interests are. We have to give them books and we have to give them resources so that they want to go seek out and learn more mm-hmm. on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And to that point earlier, when you were talking about how you utilize close reading for the research that goes into writing, but reading four or five different texts to create your own piece is a form of wide reading because you're not going to go as deep with those four to five texts because you're going to be kind of like you're wanting to get the centralized kind of the collection of thoughts and vocabulary and topics and to put that into your writing. So, you know, that would be that's an example of another reason why we read widely is to, you know, to be a great writer and well-versed on whatever it is we're writing about.
And I think to build stamina, too, because we're stopping
Absolutely.
A lot. And mm-hmm. and I sometimes think, am I stopping too much? I actually had a conversation with my principal where I thought, I feel like I'm constantly monitoring, constantly stopping. And she said, Kristen Koo, got to give a shout out. But she says, you can never, like, you have to stop and see when you notice that they're not getting it or if there's just something that you can grab and teach and model or model, you know, non-example, it's good. It's a teachable moment. Mm-hmm. But I'm seeing also when they choose reading lately, I feel this is a shift too, is the complexity is not where it used to be. Like I think that changes with demographics too. It's how much modeling you had at home, how much reading you may have had in your home. But I feel like I'm seeing a lot of Dog Man or graphic novels. And before I used to think, graphic novels, no. But I didn't think it was building stamina, but I really actually looked, I researched it thinking, what does research say? And it really, they're enjoying it. And there's an artistic thing to it. And there's also, there's such an engagement piece. And so I'm okay with that, but I do see the complexity of what they choose is not as high as it used to be for the majority, but if they like it, then I'm okay with that because mm-hmm. we're giving the complexity in these lessons, and they need to just, we had this conversation like 20 years ago about they just still need to enjoy mm-hmm. what they're reading, you know, because mm-hmm. we are monitoring a lot, and the teacher read aloud that time has... It's not like it used to be because we have to get them where they need to be. And so for them to enjoy a Dog Man or Captain Under, whatever they're reading, I just have to be okay with mm-hmm. it. And mm-hmm. the complexity is not there, but we are providing it. Mm-hmm. So stamina is huge. As long as they're doing it and they're enjoying it, then they're reading.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, too, if we talk about our own reading lives, mm-hmm. right. If I think about what I'm reading at any given time and the complexity level, like between mm-hmm. the trash novel that I might have on my bedstand, mm-hmm. you know, to more professional reading, it varies. Mm-hmm. So what do I read for choice? What do I read when I want, you know, when I want mm-hmm. to learn something? And I agree with you, right? They're reading. That's key.
Mm-hmm.
Reading inside our classrooms because we assign them things that we want them to read together and talk about, right, for the purpose of learning together, but also this idea that kids are choosing to read and write mm-hmm. outside of our classrooms without our influence,
mm-hmm.
because that will serve them well throughout a lifetime.
Yeah.
So, you know, my daughter, she's one of my daughters, is 19 years old. She reads manga. I don't, you know, but it's sort of like this glorified adult comic, mm-hmm. right? Mm. She loves these manga. I don't even know if I'm saying it right, but she's reading.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I celebrate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And when we require it at home, they're writing it in their agenda every night for me, and I'm crazy about it. Like I really want to hold them accountable, even though I say you may or may not be, but you can't fool me because I can see your stamina. I can Absolutely. See, did right. you understand mm-hmm. what you read? Are your scores going up? And mm-hmm. and what I'm finding when we're holding the kids accountable, the parents are joining in. I find that a lot more. Mm-hmm. So I love that piece, mm-hmm. sitting with them or reading with them or whatever it is. And the more we hold them accountable, the higher expectation I feel with any kids in any demographic, they really do rise to it. And if we have to take the extra accountability at home or parents or being a little, you know, just really getting on it and holding that expectation, they rise to it. And the reading at home, they're saying they're doing it. I can tell who's doing it and who's not. And they know mm-hmm. because then I might have to pull them aside and be like, yeah, remember when you said you're reading 30 minutes a night? Let's look at this. Let's look at your understanding, or let's see like how a shift of scores may have not gone up, and mm-hmm. then they'll admit that they maybe weren't. So it's all accountability and mm-hmm. home and school.
Well, let's go ahead and switch to talking about aha moments that we've either had with, and we've already started to talk about some aha moments. I think we're having some as we talk, but what are some aha moments that you have had as an educator in teaching close reading and annotation, or seeing the way a student is learning, and it might be, you know, kind of simultaneous, but what is that aha moment around using close reading and annotation strategies in your classroom?
I can go if you want. Let me go first. So like I said, we're doing a school-wide AVID push for focused note-taking, annotations, and we have a great pre-K team, and they have started using they are holding the kids accountable. It is an aha moment where I think, holy cow, they are even if it's just on
they're
a chart
4
paper,
years old.
They are 3 too. We have the 3 right? I mean, they're up to my knee. And so, but it doesn't matter if they're off a little bit. They are doing, they're holding, the teacher is doing focus note-taking on a chart paper with these babies. And even if it's just a tally mark under a hamburger, and I think we first saw it at an AVID demonstration school, Bardmore, and then we immediately were like, we can do it. It's so aha. Now we're doing it. And the pride in the teachers and the students, and then even in kindergarten, we just had a girl at our AVID PLC say that they're doing research projects now.
Yes, they are.
They're doing kindergarten research projects.
They sure are.
So how does that trickle up to us? Like, it's just, to me, I'm just like, oh, if this is amazing, when you have buy-in and everybody just tries it, then your job gets, everybody's job gets easier, but the key is the kids understand it.
Right.
Now next year they start and they know what they know. Like, they have to have a iReady notebook out when they're on iReady, and it's still a struggle. Like, I'll walk around with a paw buck. Oh, you're taking notes during that. And it's still, no matter how many times, it's repetition, but the younger kids are doing it. And
imagine you get those even, pre-K it's exciting. Those kindergarten students as they roll up the grade levels.
And the higher thinking, the higher order thinking. And to me, it doesn't matter what age. It doesn't matter. The buy-in to do it and the expectation, it's going to build and it's going to be heavenly. So while they're pulling their hair out right now because it's all of a sudden a big school-wide push, I mean, we honestly say, just wait until next year. Like, they know. And coming in, it starts conversations. The kids talk more. They just talk more. Yes. And it's interesting. And you're starting at pre-K having a conversation about whatever it is you're doing and charting. And it's
building those habits and repetition.
And starting young.
Repetition starting in pre-K.
Yeah. So
like you said.
Yeah.
I would say at my school, one of the things that we've really instituted is just celebration of growth and students knowing where they're at academically in all content areas and knowing, you know, what reading level they're at and where they should be and that they're above or they're right where they need to be or they're finally getting to the next level or the following level. In our kindergarten classes, you know, when we've learned five more letters or sounds, or we want our kids to know where they need to be and where they are in relation to that and celebrate every movement that they make. And so that's been a big thing at our school. We don't want all of that pressure on the teachers that this is where they need to be by the end of the year. We're going to work with our kids so that they own it too. And so that has really come a long way at our school the last 2 years. And it makes a huge difference, I think, when kids own their data.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love that. And when I think about annotations, right, just as a strategy, and we've talked about modeling and the teacher doing the work. And if you think about, we've had this conversation about annotations. Is it too much? Is it not enough? Is it just right? And having sort of like three texts, right? One, too much, one, not enough, one, just right. And having students, when you're in those conversations, matching their annotations up to those models and saying, is it too much? Am I annotating everything, right? Is it not enough? Are my margins blank? Or is it just right? Like, I'm stopping, you know, perhaps every paragraph and not just a topic word, but extending, you know, my hashtag and extending on that word. But going back to that idea of models and then kids knowing what is the goal here and where am I in relation to that goal?
Yeah.
Huge.
And that data ownership is huge with that it really is. And that seems daunting again at first, but the kids own it and they understand it. You think they might not, and then they do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Agree.
One of my aha moments about close reading and annotation is that once you do explicitly teach it to the kids, and it sounds like we're starting clear down in pre-K, but once they know how to do that, like lesson planning, like you don't have to do as much anymore. Once you're a teacher who understands how to explicitly teach annotation and how to have conversations and interact with students as they are marking the text and all of that, it's like the lessons just authentically start to unfold on their own. Mm-hmm. And the kids are doing a lot of the thinking and they're having aha moments, and you're just building upon what they're saying, comparing with other students, getting, you know, pull a small group real quick. Like, you two are seeing two totally different things. Like, what are you seeing? Let's hear. And it just becomes really organic, mm-hmm. and like lesson planning becomes a breeze once you and your kids really get this strategy, which is fun.
One of the things I tell all my teachers when we are sitting down to collaboratively plan is we have to do the work ourselves. So that's the most important lesson planning I think that teachers can do, is actually do the work that you're going to be asking mm-hmm. students to do. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest thing you can do as a teacher to prepare.
Right. Is practice these mm-hmm. strategies, because that's the more they practice it, then the more it becomes innate. And it's just like you can just pull it out as needed.
And we fumble.
Like right.
And then we realize, okay, that needs to be adjusted. Mm-hmm. And we get what they're going through, because sometimes it's not clear. Right. We think it might be.
That's right. I think for me, an aha moment that I've had when it comes to working with teachers and students with annotation is why? Like, what happens with all of this work? And when it's purpose-driven, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, right? Am I using these annotations to then later craft mm-hmm. an essay? Am I using these annotations to get with a group and engage in conversation, comparing mm-hmm. and contrasting, right? Is this leading to some deep discussion or something as a result mm-hmm. of this happens? Mm-hmm. Then that's an aha moment, right? Mm-hmm. It becomes powerful and kids want to engage in it. Mm-hmm. If it's just an assignment, my teacher tells me I have to annotate every paragraph and nothing mm-hmm. ever happens with these annotations, then we don't care about, right? We don't care so much. But if we know the why, then we invest mm-hmm. a little bit mm-hmm. more in the work.
And why in life are they doing it?
Exactly.
Like, I still tell them middle school is coming. Like, that is something you have to know. And I'll tell them that we do it in our staff meetings. Like, mm-hmm. we have to annotate. We have a book study. Like, we have to do that. We have to. And kids cannot understand that you're doing it, too. And really. I mean,
really show them.
Yeah. And they'll see that we do it, too. You do it in life. You do it. And that's the key to why are we doing anything.
That's
like, this is to apply it to something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, as I was preparing, thinking about the topic for today, I was thinking back to being in high school. Mm. And I had a high school science teacher that he always told me to put, told not me, he told the whole class, like to put wiggly circles around that whenever something was important or was going to be on the test. And to this day, if you look at my notes, I have little wiggly circles around, like, don't forget that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That was powerful.
That was.
Right?
It was. So it's transferred into my adult life. Here I am at work and someone's talking. I'm going to put little wiggly circles around what I just wrote. So that brings us to a quote. So we're kind of starting to wrap up here, our podcast today. And here's a quote by a famous anthropologist. Her name is Margaret Mead, and she is quoted as saying, "A child should be taught how to think, not what to think." So tell us a little bit about what that means to you and maybe how that relates to close reading and annotation.
So I think it's, again, the higher order thinking, questioning themselves. Mm-hmm. That's our goal of why, what are they thinking? Why are they thinking it? And what does it mean? Like, what is their thought behind it? Instead of just taking it for granted that that's what they said or that's what they thought, why? And how did they come up with that? So then they have the ownership of their thoughts. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because once you are doing that, I don't even know where it fits in to tell them what to think.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to think of an example when we're telling them what to think. It's so, nowadays, I feel like it's so much conversation, and it wouldn't even lend itself to telling them what they're thinking, because they're discussing so much of their thinking with their partnerships or whatever. So, yeah, it's the higher order trying to get them to understand their own thinking. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the path of them. You know, we're not telling them what to think.
And I think the collaboration part is is critical, in that every one of the students in that classroom is bringing their own prior knowledge to the table, and that background knowledge. And so you're going to learn from others and what they bring to the table, and maybe you're going to change your opinion, or maybe you're not going to change your opinion. But getting all of those ideas out and then allowing them to decipher for themselves.
Holly,
you have any thoughts?
So I mean, just to build off of what you both said, that whole notion that learning is social, right? Who's the smartest person in the room? It's the room. So allowing students to read, to make their own interpretations, to share their interpretations with others, because your interpretation is not my interpretation, right? But when you share your interpretation, I might change my thinking based on what you said, right? And so I think that in the end, you know, we want to embrace that, to go back to what Robin said, right? So that we're developing young young people that are going to go out and change the world, right? And do big things when they graduate. Beyond school, right? College, career ready. These are the skills that they need. They need to work together. They need to think together. They need to be able to change their minds in the face of new factual information, right? And that my initial thinking is never my best thinking, right?
And ownership of what they're thinking. Like with a lot of times, there's so much that's up for interpretation, even in these complex texts or anything.
Mostly in the complex texts, right?
And I find that I'm not going to, it's not a right or wrong answer. And I have said, even if that answer is right there, and it's maybe wrong on their, it's not, because I've said, and I've said, you guys are really good negotiators with your parents, I bet. I bet you can argue anything. And so tell me why you think that's the answer.
And then they and defend it.
They like, absolutely, once you say, like you're a bunch of attorneys running around here. But they're not wrong if they can prove why they're not wrong. And that is so strong. And
we live in a very gray world, right?
It's true. And so it's not black or white. Exactly. And so, and that is a challenge to them, because I hear the collaboration with a partner, and they're not wrong. Like, just defend it. And don't listen to your partner. Don't listen. That might not be the right answer. You tell them, talk about it. And they do.
I love to hear them say things like, oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah. And they
are. I'm changing my thinking. Or, you know, oh, I didn't consider that.
And the longer, the younger, the better. The younger.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this quote makes me think about how information is changing so rapidly in our society. And so when we think about our students being college and career and life ready, so that career and life piece with the way that information is coming at us. I mean, there's so much information just like right here in the palm of our hands. We need to teach our students how to think with all the information that is coming at us. And then how to critically apply that into various situations. And it's going to be, it's already here, but as we continue in the future with so much information changing and coming at us so rapidly, it's so important to being able to discern that information, which close reading and annotation really helps us sift through all of that. And you know, I don't want to get political, but then there's what's that thing on social media when it's, like the misinformation coming out. Like I can't think of it, what it's called. But anyway, but it's like you need to know.
There's a factometer.
Yes. Yeah. And all of those sort of things. You need to know and, you know, do your research and your fact checking.
And they are taking it as fact. It doesn't, it reminds me of that, remember what are they called, a meme or whatever, where Abraham Lincoln said, I learned it on the internet.
Right.
You know, so they have to discern.
Wow.
They really think that it is fact.
Right.
They'll repeat it with a period, not a question mark. Like they're repeating facts and It's so important. You're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, thank you guys for being here today. I'm just really blown away by these conversations. I'm blown away that these annotation close reading is happening all the way pre-K through five mm-hmm. in this conversation. And I know it's happening even further in our schools. And I'm really taking a lot of just like, wow, with what you are doing in your schools. And I thank you for being here today. And I thank you for taking up on Holly's invitation and sharing the knowledge and sharing your knowledge with our listeners and with us today.
Love it. And I totally agree. I just want to echo huge thank you to both of you for tuning in, for joining in. And tune in next time to our listeners as we continue to debate one of my favorite topics, writing for learning, which is an extension, actually, of what we're talking about now, close reading, right? Mm-hmm. Annotation, writing for learning. So,
yes.
So exciting.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, listeners, and tune in for our next episode for some more aha moments.